Is there always a rational explanation for the paranormal? Should one believe reports of unexplained phenomena? Unknown 9 Awakening is the action-adventure video game at the heart of the Unknown 9 narrative universe. You play as Haruna, an audacious heroine with the ability to venture into the fold, a mysterious dimension that overlaps our own. On her quest for powerful hidden knowledge, Haruna, who is portrayed by Anya Chalotra, will learn to master her unique connection to the fold, which allows her to channel its powers into our world. But such power does not go unnoticed. She quickly becomes the target of the Ascendants, a splinter faction of a secret society known as the Leap Year Society, who want to use the fold to alter the course of human history. Their confrontation will take them across the world, from the sands of Mauritania and perilous Indian jungles to the gothic landscapes of Portugal.
Get ready to dive into a mysterious parallel dimension. Unknown 9 Awakening releases on October 18th, 2024 for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the Unknown 9 universe at unknown9.com/alien.
In May of 1951, 60 miles north of present-day Seoul, South Korea, a U.S. Army regiment was preparing an artillery bombardment when a strange glowing object descended towards them from a nearby mountain. The craft approached close enough that a private was able to take aim and fire armor-piercing rounds and seemingly strike the object, eliciting a metallic sound. Suddenly, the craft began to emit a beam of light that swept across the positions of the terrified service members. Some reported feeling a kind of burning sensation throughout their body as the light covered them. The craft then shot off at a 45-degree angle, leaving the soldiers confused and fearing they had seen some kind of new Soviet superweapon. Within days, the men started reporting symptoms that seemed to resemble radiation sickness. Similar symptoms were reported by two women and a young boy who were unfortunate enough to encounter a similar craft on a December night in 1980. This encounter would leave at least one of the ladies completely debilitated within just a few days and with seemingly lifelong effects. It would lead to one of the only UFO cases in history where a formal lawsuit was brought against the US government for damages caused by an unidentified flying object. This case file joined the theorists as they dab on their radioactive bingo cards in the Cash Landrum UFO Encounter.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing Case File 179, the Cash Landrum UFO Incident. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Woo!
Doubleheader tonight.
Yeah, a little sloppy. What the
fuck? Was that Dan?
Whatever noises you just made, Zan, is the only thing that's happening in my head right now. That's it. That's all I got, man.
Also, we are 1 month away, if you're listening to this, less than a month away from the second annual running challenge.
Oh,
and,
no.
And it's going to start April 1st. If you want in, you got to download Map My Run. It's an Under Armour app, free on your phone. Create your profile and add me, Braden R. You'll see me because I have the ATT logo as my profile picture. Or Ryan, are you just Ryan Zed?
I don't know. Add you. I'm not sure what I am, to be honest.
Add me, Braden R, and then I will invite you to the challenge that begins April 1st.
We logged an unbelievable amount of miles and kilometers as a group last year. Hopefully we can beat it this year. Just about getting out there, getting active, start the year.
Working off those winter beers.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. All it sounds like to me is a bunch of guys just trying to be the best at exercising. Not into it. Play real sports.
And just a lot of people have messaged on Discord and asked, like, oh, you know, I'm not much of a runner, but I'd like to participate in walking. Like, is that okay? Yeah. Yeah. This isn't, it's not so much a competition as it is about everyone getting out and kind of being supportive of each other. And just seeing how much we can log. However,
says the guy that's been training for this.
However, guy's if got you a, wanted,
but he's got a picture of Zeitgeist. He's got a picture of Mr. Zeitgeist on his wall, and he's just training.
There's no way, never.
But he's Listen, he's playing Rocky Montage fucking music in his room, bobbing, weaving, getting ready for this fucking running challenge.
It's pretty close. But the top 10, there's going to be some scrutiny. Like if you're all of a sudden, you know, posting your workout post-run, not doing the automatic upload, you're uploading it yourself, you're going to have some questions.
You get beaked.
To answer. You're going to get beaked. The top 10, there's some scrutiny that comes with that. But if you just want to participate, yeah, it's open to everyone. So add me, and it's going to be a fun, shitty month again of running. Hopefully I don't have lifelong injuries like I did after the last one.
I still kind of do, but that's all right. Yeah, just get out there, get some kilometers on you, walking, running, hiking, whatever you can do. Let's do it together.
I mean, you do have the fucking forest beard now, Zell. I think that probably is going to add some extra miles on you.
I wasn't sure how long I'm going to grow this thing, but maybe I should just keep it going and just keep running and running.
Dude, that's the Forrest Gump.
And
you're
running.
Never going to stop.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's you got a good looking beard. I'm not going to lie. It's nice.
She's thick.
Coming from Patches of Houlihan over there.
She's thick. I'm about to get some wax. Because I kept growing out the side stash so I can get a good fucking twist.
That's a good look, Zell.
Good twist going
flip
on.
To get those all going up there. Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff.
So jealous. I'm so jealous.
Anyways, what are we talking about tonight?
The Cache Landrum UFO incident. Oh. This is a fucking phenomenal UFO case.
Fun one.
Not only is it a phenomenal UFO case, but just what you just said, that's the name of the coolest guy ever made, Cache Landrum. Sounds like a fucking detective, you know, like Cache Landrum.
Yeah.
God damn it. Cache or Loose Cannon. That's the third fucking police cruiser this week. $60,000 of property damage in one month. God damn it. Turn in your badge and gun.
Aim for the bushes.
God damn it, Cache. That thief only had $11 in his in the purse. You caused $500,000 worth of damage to the city.
Crime doesn't pay.
Yeah, it's a fun one for sure.
Yeah, so Cache Landrum is the combination of the two families that were the last names of the two people who were in the car, three people that were in the car, on the evening of December 29th, 1980. So you had Betty Cache, Vicky Landrum, and then Vicky's 7-year-old grandson, Colby Landrum. Right, they were driving home from Dayton, Texas, in Cash's Oldsmobile Cutlass, and they had just before that dined out at a probably high class dining establishment. It's also a truck stop restaurant.
The best burgers there, man. Best burgers.
Yeah. After what seemed to be an unsuccessful hunt for bingo,
you get a Salisbury steak and a handy.
An unsuccessful hunt for bingo led them on this journey.
Yeah. That's what they described on their, in their interviews, after this, like official interviews, they were looking for bingo parlors. They had forgotten.
The poor kid's probably like, grandma, why is there holes in all the bathroom stalls? I don't understand. For a good time called Big Reg. What does that mean?
There are a couple bingo sharks going from hall to hall.
Yeah, they had originally gone to Cleveland, Texas, from Dayton. So they had driven from Dayton to Cleveland, Texas, and then they had
Texas.
We had too many beers on Cosmic Channel. It's just so fucked up right now.
Oddly enough, at this particular truck stop, they ran into George Michael, but that's a different story. Keep going.
So then from Cleveland, they drove to New Caney, and both bingo parlors were closed. I guess they had described that they had forgotten that it was a Monday. And I guess you don't have bingo on Mondays. I'm not a bingo shark, so I don't know when bingo is normally had, I suppose. But it had been a long holiday. This is the holiday season, so December 29th. They weren't
one
sure.
One thing I wanted to interject is, like, I have gone to a couple halls and played some bingo in my day. And honestly,
on a Monday?
Some of the... Never on a Monday, Dan. That's
everyone knows that.
Blue. Like, nah, yeah, fuck you.
Anybody who plays bingo knows that.
You don't dab on a Monday. But
don't fucking roll on Shabbos.
These ladies in this hall, I played up in Fort Nelson. There was like a video bingo. I could manage like four sheets that I would dab. And there would be like ladies that had like must have been like 25 full sheets in front of them, and they've got dual fisting dabbers, and they're just like dabbing numbers like crazy the entire time. I'm like, holy shit, like goddamn, like this is intense. So, you know, I think Vicky and Betty were bingo sharks.
They're yep. seasoned vets, man.
Like they had to get the fix. They're so addicted.
Hall to hall to sharking.
If you have relatives that have issue with bingo, call the bingo hotline.
Look it up.
Yeah.
So after, you know, being unsuccessful in their hunt for bingo, they had dined out at this truck stop restaurant, and then they were traveling home on State Road 1485 is what is reported. And so this road, it kind of cuts in between. If you look on a map, like New Caney, Dayton, where they were heading home to, are kind of like a bit like New Caney is about northwest of them a little bit, probably 20 miles, maybe something like that. So what they actually, when they're driving there, they're talking about whatever, relating stories about what they're having. And then Colby from the back seat seems to be the first to spot an unusually large and bright object that seemed to be moving through the night sky. And
wait,
he pointed
second.
It out.
Don't, dude, I thought we had an audio clip of that. Can we play that?
Sure. Here, it sounds something like this. Ma! 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 You see that light? Ma! Ma, you see that light?
What in tarnations are you talking about, Colby?
There's a light. There's a light over the trees on the left.
Oh, Betty, he's just bored. Do you have anything that we can hand to him?
Keep hush now, child. Child, Colby, now go ahead, put your hands out. I'm just gonna reach down here in the bottom of my purse and just grab about 14 Werther's candies and just drop them in your hands.
Are those Werther's originals? You know what, child? I think I also have some licorice all sorts. Would you like some of those?
Yeah, Colby, now tell me, you know those little strawberry candies that leave those little strawberry splinters in on your tongue? I'm going to give you some of those too, child.
Oh, and child, just in case after you have the candy, here's a little toothpick that's going to be picked out by this tiny bird that you push down. And he picks the toothpick, child. There you go.
Don't you worry about that, because I got these little moist towelettes I got from a Chinese restaurant about 6 months ago. Here's a little moist towelette.
Oh, and Chad, don't forget, there's about 14 fortune cookies. You can crush them all and pick which fortune you want.
Ma.
No. You hush now, child. Hush now, child. Because if you look beside, you look behind you there, Colby. Right beside the suction cupped Garfield in the back window, there's actually a little box of Kleenex next to two dead bugs. Go ahead and grab some Kleenexes out the back window.
And now they are stained yellow from 10 years of UV rays, but they're still good.
But child, if it gets too bright here, just try on Grandma's HD wraparound glasses. You go ahead, try those on.
But Mama, it,
you know what? Are you cold? I just crocheted you a scarf. Why don't you put that around your neck, child?
But Mama,
now Colby, relax now, Colby. You look a little bit thirsty to me. I've actually got this half drinking lukewarm bottle of Canada Dry ginger ale.
Oh, Lord Jesus, what is that on the road?
So Betty and Vicky, after sounding exactly like Zelda Rubinstein from Poltergeist, seem to notice this light getting closer to the car, approaching a lot closer than a normal aircraft would be. They didn't really take notice before because the road that they were traveling on was about 35 miles from Houston International Airport. So Betty and Vicky kind of, they didn't really kind of think anything strange of what it was until they saw this object get extremely close and pretty much right in the middle of the road. And so what they describe seeing is some type of large diamond-shaped object that was floating probably about 130 feet away from where they were. Vicky told Betty to stop the car, and Vicky remembers fearing that they would actually be burned by what seemed to be flames emitting from the bottom of the craft. She described in an interview that these flames seemed to be coming out maybe intermittently. They weren't constant, so they were kind of like coming down like, and every time the flames would come out, the object would seem to rise back up into the air, but it was just sitting there in the bottom. So they were, you know, obviously at this point they were upset, both of them, all pretty much freaking out. When they stopped the car, Vicky said that she put it in park, and because she still recalls the radio still being on, though it was set to a low volume, when the car actually then went dead.
Oh, so we've heard this
now
before.
Now you have, even inside the car, they both reported feeling this intense heat or a burning sensation on their skin and face.
Well, it's like anytime there's like even pyrotechnics and you're in a stadium,
you feel
that rush of heat. So I imagine if it's some like big craft with a propulsion system pointed at your car, like you're going to feel that heat.
Yeah.
Now Betty, I believe, exited the car at this point. And there are different reports when I was researching this that either both of them or really just Betty exited the car, because Vicky, it was also saying that Vicky stayed in the car with Colby, but then there's also reports that both Vicky and Betty exited the car at some point.
Vicky stayed in the car to proclaim the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. From what I heard,
she
it was
just turned
Betty.
Right away. It's like, yeah.
From what I heard, it was Betty who got out of the car because, yeah, he was in the car reciting, this is the second coming of Jesus Christ. This is revelations happening right now.
Okay, listen. Now, think about this. This woman is in here proclaiming the return of Jesus Christ. Colby's in the back seat shitting his fucking pants. Betty gets out. Think about how fucking tormented that poor kid would be after this now. He's going to be waking up in the middle of the night being like, Jesus is coming to get me.
It definitely made an impact on Colby because he does recall, and you can check, he was on an episode of Ancient Aliens like in 2020, and they interviewed him about the incident, and he described very much the same. He recalled a description of the craft, which is very similar to what, you know, exactly the same that Vicky and Betty both gave, that this craft was about an estimated about 100 feet tall, 100 feet wide. They like to liken it to about the size of a municipal water tower was what the kind of image that they like to describe how big this thing was. So it wasn't small. It was a very large craft.
Right.
Kids messed up for life after that.
No kidding.
His grandma's telling him it's Jesus.
Yeah.
What happens if like 2 days ago,
grandma's friends like, I don't think that's Jesus.
Well, yeah. And you got your grandma's telling you it's Jesus. What happens if it's like, kids in his head being like, holy shit, I just jerked off for the first time. Now Jesus is raining fire from
the
sky.
To fucking
I killed
hell.
Me and my grandma because I touched my shit.
Well, this kid was only 7 years old, so if he's jerking off at seven, I mean, he's the
maybe
he's the anomaly. But either way, so they stop. Betty gets out, and the story goes that actually Vicky, like, she says she touches like the vinyl dash, and it was heated up so much that there's a handprint.
Yeah, there's some kind of discrepancy that I found there that it was either, but that's true, that they recalled that event happening where it was either when Betty stopped the car and Vicky went forward, she put her hand on the dash, and then, or it's when they re-entered the car at some point that Vicky put her hand on the dashboard of the car, and perhaps it had been because of a result of the heat of this propulsion or whatever was going on, like her hand and her fingers left imprints on the softened material of the of the dash,
because like a softened, it been heated. Like a softened vinyl dash. So I guess in my mind, like it obviously it wasn't like super hot, it would have like melted your hand, but it was hot enough to like leave like a
mold,
like a handprint in dust, the same type of thing. Like you could just see the outline probably on the dash, like a nice, right. nice fingerprint.
And Vicky claimed even when she tried to re-enter the car after being, you know, being outside and observing the craft from outside the car, for perhaps maybe anywhere from probably 5 to 7 minutes or 5 to 10 minutes. I don't think it's really 100% clear. She put her bare hand on the door handle and she found it hot to the touch. So yeah. hot that she couldn't, you know, grip it properly. So she actually said that she used her coat to shield her hand from the heat of the door and to be able to.
Would you
to
be open getting it. Back in your car? Like if you went to go touch your door handle and open the door and like all that shit's hot to touch, I wouldn't be like, well, I'm going to sit in the seat.
Hey, didn't you guys do that little burn house when you were kids in like kindergarten where you go and you got to feel the door handles? Oh, this one's hot. You can't open it. That's preschool shit.
What?
You're not going back in there.
You touch it with the back of your hand. If it's slightly warm, don't go in.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Nope.
You know better.
So these are definitely things that they recall clearly from their experience. And so she got back in the car. From what she recalls and then interviews that she did after the event, she was kind of, her attitude at the time was like, she said that she felt safer outside of the car initially. Like she's like, okay, for some reason she's like, my brain told me that we would be safer outside the car than inside the car. I don't know necessarily what thought processes goes into that, because it's like, I mean, if the car died, I mean, I don't
it's
know.
Not going like, anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. Well, fuck, we'll be stuck in the car. I'd rather just be able to run or something like that. But so after they all were inside the car, this craft passed over the road and then out of sight over the tree line. I think they said from left to right over them.
Yep.
And the road that they were on, 1485 runs from east to west. I'm not 100% sure. 1485 runs from east to west and then it turns sharply south, but I don't know if it's actually 1485 anymore once it turns
south. Once it turns, right.
I looked on Google Maps, so.
Well, the road could have changed from back then too. I don't know. Maybe it was.
So I'm not 100% sure if they were just right on there, because there's not a definite record of where they weren't 100% sure, like where they were on the road. I'm not exactly sure. So anyways, they saw the craft move across the road out of sight over the tree line. Shortly after the craft moved out of sight, they recalled seeing, or they reported seeing, and counting a number of tandem rotor helicopters.
It was like 23 of them, right?
Well, yeah, they count it 23, 26. The reports said a little bit. They're not sure because they're saying that.
The report said that they identified 23 tandem rotor Boeing CH-47 Chinooks in pursuit. Right. And I was like, which one of Betty or Vicky ID'd these helicopters?
No.
These bingo sharks who were like, I'll tell you, Betty, you see this?
Helicopter enthusiasts.
You think, see that? Oh my word! That's 23 tandem rotor Boeing CH-47.
They didn't say the name of the chopper though.
They didn't know exactly what.
But what I'm saying is, how is it reported then? How is it reported that
they saw the tandem rotor helicopters, they are very distinct. The Chinook helicopters are very distinct, having that very unique dual rotor design.
Yeah, that's what Vicky explained to Betty.
Are we sure they aren't? Are we positive they weren't big Black Hawks?
No,
they weren't big.
No,
Blackhawks?
Because the thing is like they didn't identify them as the CH-47 Chinooks. No. They knew
they
knew that dual rotor helicopter. And then later after the fact, when they actually saw one at they had like some type of like air show, kind of like a National Guard air show in the area. That's when they knew exactly which one it was, because they had one at an exhibit, an air show exhibition. At Dayton, like near Dayton or something that they had attended
yeah.
after the experience.
Initially, like Vicky said to Betty, like, I've seen 22 of them helicopters with the two propellers. And she's like, what? And there's one more. He's like, make that 23. And
then Betty, like, I'll tell you what.
So they seen 20, 23 choppers. I mean, that's a lot of choppers. I mean, that would be a loud rolling thunder coming across the land. And yes, at the air show is when, like, so goes the story, is at the air show, they heard a pilot over, like, talking about, like, oh, I might have seen a UFO, like, over here. So goes the story.
Right. So that's after the fact.
But
even before that, when they got back home, like, immediately, just hours after they got home, all three seemed to fall sick, or they started displaying some type of symptoms, such as nausea, headaches, diarrhea, reddening of the eyes. All of them got
hair
pretty...
being pulled out in clumps.
Well, that's at least, yeah, a little bit. So a little bit of hair loss, and a kind of a, I don't know, like a severe case in Betty's case. I believe Betty had it the worst.
Yeah.
Of the three.
You know what? Seeing pictures of her with her hair loss made me think, what did they say? 1 in 4 men has male pattern baldness.
Mm-hmm.
So is it more likely that all four of us have male pattern baldness, or at some point in our life, all four of us have experienced a similar incident that
are you saying
Betty
that
and Vicky did?
All four of us have experienced ARS in our life. I don't know about that.
What's ARS? Is that the
acute radiation sickness?
Well, hey, I think statistically, only one of us should be balding. So the other three of us have been exposed to radiation.
Right. I'm just saying, if one of us has male pattern baldness, there's still three others with it. What is the chances that it's one of ours is caused by a UFO encounter?
Hey, I'm going to blame mine on I ate a fucking meteorite one time, and then that's what happened. Sense.
Listen, if you're telling me the reason why I'm balding is because of fucking Alien, I'm about to go Will Smith on all those motherfuckers.
Maybe
I see him. One of those guys is getting punched in the face.
Maybe because I ate the meteorite, I was irradiated, and because we spent so much time together when we were younger, you both got affected by my radiation.
Dan doesn't. That doesn't make sense for Dan.
No, but Dan.
I guess Dan's the only one that actually is balding.
Dan's the one in four, and we're the three irradiation victims.
Sure.
Well, yeah. I think we'll have to, you know, to sort out that mystery, I think we'll have to go to Göbekli Tepe and sort out some answers.
Yeah.
And see if we can get hair back.
Get over the turkey.
The secrets of male pattern baldness are hidden within the ancient ruins of Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah.
Pillar 84, circle 3. That's where you find it. So goes
the
theory.
So Cash seemed to suffer most severe from these symptoms. But although Colby also seemed to suffer pretty bad as well. Vicky said that, you know, like a night after, or that night, Colby seemed to wake up and was like severely felt dehydrated or something. Thirsty. He was demanding water. He had like runny diarrhea.
Yeah, he pooped his bed.
Shit the bed.
Definitely shit the bed. So there's this sharing of symptoms. Even Vicky said that she felt the kind of like, you know, a general sense of like headache, you know, the sensation of her skin, kind of like a small, like a burning, like a light burning sensation. So they're all suffering somewhat similar symptoms, but to different degrees.
Right.
Now, and if you were to put all those symptoms together in a tight little fucking neat little package and deliver to somebody, you would most likely diagnose that situation as some sort of acute radiation poisoning.
Just like the sickness, the hair loss, the diarrhea, like all that stuff?
Nothing else acute would result in symptoms like that. And now I'm sure we're going to get in a fucking massive argument later, because acutely, that those symptoms wouldn't really mimic anything else, but go ahead.
So they didn't really report their sickness. They didn't go to the hospitals until a few days, almost like a week after. I think
4 days. It took Betty 4 days to be admitted to hospital.
Right. So Betty at one point, like January 3rd, she was admitted to Houston Hospital because she couldn't move. Like she could not get up out of bed, or she was feeling so bad that she couldn't bed. And then she was treated for, not diagnosed, but treated for acute radiation poisoning.
Well, which makes sense, right? Because she's at this point in time, I'd imagine she's on some degree, she's going to be presenting as hypovolemic. Like she's losing all her bodily fluids, continuously fucking vomiting, diarrhea. You get to a certain point where your blood pressure and shit is just going to fucking tank.
Right. And she also described having some degree of photosensitivity or sun allergy, which persisted after the fact. So many years after the fact, she also described having some type of sun allergy where she said she couldn't stay out in the sun for too long. She would say that her skin would break out in blisters or she would not, or she'd feel sick. Like she couldn't even go out in the sun.
Now, there are photos, too, of these, like, you following this incident, where they do have these blisters on their skin as well, which is pretty interesting.
Right. There's at least one picture, I believe, like her skin breaking out in some type of rash. It's a black and white photo, correct?
Yeah. And then you can see some, like loony size fucking blisters on her.
Right. Yeah, it's unusual. I don't know when that picture was taken. I'm not sure when that picture was taken. I don't know if it's 100% labeled about when that picture was taken. I saw that photo a couple times while researching it, but I couldn't find a definite date for when it was taken.
Yeah, you're talking about the one, like, it's a picture of her hand from, like, a top view.
Right, and it's got, like, a little kind of, like moon crescent, like a crescent, like, wound or something on her, a crescent-shaped wound or something on her hand.
The one I saw was completely round, but I've got it. I can pull it up.
Well, there's I'll put it in the stream here. Claim fair use if you're watching the stream. It pretty much just looks, if you're looking, you can search on Google, just search Betty Cash, hand, and you'll find it. I don't know. Can you really see that well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bigger?
Yeah, it does kind of look like, you know what it reminds me of, initial look? Like if you just had to be what do you think that is? No, I would say, have you ever, when I was really young, we used to put salt on our hands and then put ice cubes on it, and you'd give yourself a chemical burn. That's what it kind of looked like to me.
Sounds like a bizarre childhood.
You're like grade 7, man.
Yeah, it's just fucking burn our skin.
We just learned science. We're like, science is cool.
Hurting yourself is cooler.
Dude, ice and salt, people used to do that all the time. Like, yeah, really? Burn their skin. That's stupid, but people did it.
So for Betty, it seems that Betty, these symptoms or this, at least the photosensitivity and the blistering skin, these symptoms seem to plague her for years. Not so much the other, Vicky and Colby didn't necessarily experience these prolonged symptoms or these conditions. But Colby seemed to be mentally traumatized by his experience with this crap. No kidding.
Yeah, he thought it was Jesus.
The one long-term thing that I found out with Vicky was the fact that she ended up having cataracts. Like, that was the first thing. Instead of going to the hospital, she ended up going to an optometrist because she was still suffering from fucking issues with her sight. And then that's when she got diagnosed with cataracts.
It's like she's...
But other than that...
Do cataracts form because of, exposure, bright light? Or is it just something different?
It's normally some sort of normal hereditary issue that you would have, but
this is Vicky, right? We're talking about
right. This is Vicky.
So she was much older than Betty at the time,
right?
Which at her age, cataracts would not be
not uncommon, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So Colby was so distressed by the experience that they had on that road that night that this is what we had talked about earlier, that Vicky had taken him to kind of try and get him over his fear. Or I'm not 100% sure if he kind of if every time he heard a helicopter, he was freaking out and having Vietnam flashbacks, which is a real thing. PTSD is a real thing. I'm not sure if that's what that's how far it went, but,
just some CCR plays in his head and he curls up on the floor.
So I'm not sure if that's how far it went and that he was in such a state that, that he was pretty much incapable of doing anything, but she took him to an air show, an exhibition of the Texas National Guard at one point near Dayton. And this is where she had seen the Chinook helicopter. And she kind of learned the name of the helicopter, where it was. And she tried to take Colby to get him over his fears. Now, while they were kind of getting a tour of one of the helicopters, Vicky believed that she had overheard a pilot of one of the helicopters in a conversation with another visitor at the time. And he seemed to be talking, or what she thought, he was talking about a recent UFO incident that had happened around Huffman, Texas, which is just a little bit south, maybe about 9 miles south of where they were that night when they had sighted that UFO. Now, Vicky actually approached the pilot, and she was relieved to hear about this story, because they hadn't seen anything up to this point in the media about this event.
Dan, this is the classic scene in a movie where everyone's been telling this woman that she's crazy and she didn't see what he saw. She's trying to help her grandson out, be like, okay, let's go to the air show. And she's like, see, there's nothing to be afraid of. And as she says that, she overhears this pilot talking about the UFO incident. She goes, I know I'm not crazy. I know it happened.
Yeah,
like that's how that would play out. And now kid's freaked out.
I imagine
again
she was I imagine she was a little bit more cordial about it. Vicky, from her interviews and on TV, and from the transcribed interviews, she seemed a little bit more down to earth than that. But
she did. If you watch, because I watched the Unsolved Mysteries of this case.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And they seem pretty normal in the interviews. Like they're not like screaming about that there was this craft. They're just like, I did this and I got sick and blah, blah, blah. So.
Right. So I Vicky said that she approached this guy, approached the pilot of the craft with relief. She was like, yeah, I saw that thing and it did something and it hurt my friend, and my grandson got sick. And so, she tried to talk to the pilot more about the UFO incident, tried to get him to tell her more about what happened. And then she said that the pilot at that point refused to talk to her anymore about that incident.
Classified.
Yeah, but he's already bullshitting it with somebody else about it. What's the difference?
Well, he was probably
leaning against the helicopter talking to some young girls, being like, yeah, we chased a UFO a week back, and then grandma comes wanting more information, right? He's like, oh shit,
or kick rocks, fucking Gray Bush.
Or he was just talking to another pilot about it.
So there was an actual legitimate formal report by the Pentagon into the incident, and by Lieutenant Colonel George Saran. And they identified the pilot who had been making the remarks that day as Chief Warrant Officer 3 Culberson. Chief Warrant Officer being just like senior enlisted officer. So in their quote, they said that in conversation with the aircraft pilot, CW3 Culberson, Mrs. Landrum had heard him say that he was flying the evening of the incident. So not necessarily that he had seen a UFO, but that he was flying that evening. And then she pressed him for more details. And then he responded with he was prohibited from adding more information because of national security. So, I mean, it could have been something completely innocuous. It could have been something whatever, but he just wasn't allowed to say anything else. So whether he was talking to a colleague or an actual visitor, not 100% sure. That's just how the story goes.
Right. And we got more to this case, but we're just going to refill, take a quick beer break, and we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, Landrum and both Cash believed that they had seen something, and they were actually strictly believed that it was that it wasn't something actually UFO. They believed that it was something earthly. So they were kind of set on that it was some type of government technology or some type of military technology that they had seen and encountered and had perhaps, you know, had hurt them or had caused these conditions that they were experiencing, these symptoms that they had. So they contacted pretty much everyone that they could possibly think of. They said that they tried to call Washington at some point. They tried to contact NASA in trying to find someone who could give them some answers. And eventually, they were put in contact with the NASA aerospace engineer John Schuessler at the time, who was an avid UFO researcher at the time. Now, this is 1980. So Blue Book, Operation Blue Book, and pretty much all of the government funded investigatory bodies for UFOs had been closed. Like Blue Book didn't exist at this point. There were none of those things. Like ATIP wasn't even a thing
that we know of yet.
Yeah, that we know of. There wasn't really a body to investigate these reports. So the military had pretty much had their say, and they, you know, U.S. government said that these are the scientists that they had hired to assess the threat of UFOs had said that these things are not a threat. They seem to be here. If they are from another planet or some other place, we don't know why they're here, but they're not threatening in any way. But anyways, but they believed that this was something that had hurt them, physically hurt them, affect them, and they wanted to know what it was. So they got in contact with John Schuessler. Now, Schuessler reported that he had started his investigation. He had talked with them. He had found, had in-depth conversations with both of them, Betty and Vicky, and he had found them to be reliable witnesses. He had found them to be, described them down to earth. Cause I mean, if you watch videos of them and you look at their testimonies, they don't really seem to exaggerate. They just kind of say what they believe happened.
They seem sound of mind. Like they seem
right.
Just normal.
Yeah. Our boy, Mr. Leo Sprinkles thought so.
Mr. Dr. Sprinkles.
Dr. Sprinkles. Sprinkles?
You talking about Dr. Sprinkles. Yeah. Come on now. Dr.
He,
Sprinkles.
He met with the women too.
Right. They, at least one of them had gone under hypnotic regression therapy at some point. And then she did report that in her interview. I think it was either Becky. Well, it's either Becky or Vicky. Which one was it?
I don't remember which. I'd just be guessing. I don't remember if it was Betty or Vicky. One of them.
I know though. It was either. I think it was Betty that had gone underneath hypnotic regression about that time, trying to figure out what they had actually seen. But Schuessler had investigated to the point where he said that he physically visited the scene of where they believe the incident that had happened 7 weeks after the Cash and Landrum had reported having their encounter. And he didn't know what he was going to find, but he said that he was shocked to discover that there was a large area of pavement that had been or seemed to be scorched, seemed to have scorch marks
like that
on it,
like the asphalt was burned
middle
of the road. The one interesting thing, like I know that he investigated the car as well, and one thing that he doesn't mention is the handprint in the dashboard.
Right.
I feel like so, that would be pretty significant.
That is a point of contention. They didn't take any photos of the imprint in the dashboard. I don't think that was actually a part of, you know, it, of Schuessler's investigation that he had actually witnessed that or seen that. I'm not sure. Maybe the vinyl had reformed, or maybe I'm not sure if it had 100% happened. So that is a point of.
I thought about it and I was like, okay, so maybe they're in the car. They say it got really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe when
it cooled.
Maybe the handprint was like, it wasn't necessarily like an imprint in the vinyl, but it was something to do with like moisture or something. And like she put her hand on it and it was like, I have no idea, but I'm just, if it was like a melted or like, you know, moldable vinyl and you put your print in it, I couldn't see it like cooling without whatever was pushed into it. So I thought maybe.
But I wonder if it was one of those things where like maybe on a hot summer day, if you got in and put your hand, you could do that to the vinyl.
Just kind of push it in.
As it would reheat, it would just kind of like reform But like, do you know what I mean?
That would be like, what would be significant about that for her to talk about that?
It was hot enough in the evening. It was hot enough in the evening that it happened within a matter of minutes.
In Texas, I don't know, like how
we are talking about like cars, like in what, late '70s. So maybe late '70s,
probably.
Maybe it was like a thick vinyl wrap, and it was actually pretty soft, and you could just do that on any day. And then the fact that it happened during the accident, like you pushed into it, and you could see a handprint, and then maybe it did slowly rebound. I don't know, but
right. I mean, because there is the kind of contention, like I mentioned, where it was. I'm not 100% sure. In the Unsolved Mysteries episode, they described that she put her hand on the dashboard when they stopped the car.
Yeah,
and then there's another report. There's other reports where they said that she put her hand after the fact, like after they had stopped. So there's a little bit of a
tough
discrepancy
to nail it. Yeah, tough to nail the exact time of the handprint. But
so now an interesting thing that Schuessler noted, he said that after the discovery of the scorch marks on that section of pavement, he said that he reported that that section of the state road 1485 was actually repaved like days after he had investigated that site.
Yeah,
that's what Schuessler says.
I heard days or I heard a week or two, but either way, by the time they went back there again, it was repaved.
So, it was repaved.
So goes the story.
So goes the story.
So whatever happened there, someone knew about it and was trying to, if you go with the story, someone was trying to just get rid of it, whatever little evidence there was.
Yeah. So Schuessler even went as far as to meet with other actual possible witnesses. So this included Lamar Walker, who was a Dayton police officer at the time. And he had reported seeing an actual formation of the same twin rotor military helicopters on that night in question. So he said that he recalled having their ground search landing lights on. Walker told UFO hunters in 2009 that they seemed to be looking for something, or that's what he reported seeing, or that was his opinion. There's actually another witness that they reported. His name was Jerry McDonald, and he had claimed that he had seen some type of object that was glowing with the intensity of what he compared to an acetylene torch. Damn. And that had actually crossed the skies over Dayton minutes before the actual approximate time that Cash and Landrum had their encounter.
Now, the first witness only saw the helicopters, though. He didn't see the craft itself.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen the helicopters, and what Heath says is, judging by their report, that those choppers were going in the direction of their sighting.
Right.
But so, and he was a police officer, right?
Yes.
So, And he noticed these twin rotor. He didn't say 23 though, right? He said,
you act like that adds some credibility to his statement though, because like, I'll tell you for one thing, like I know a law enforcement officer very well, probably one of the shadiest dudes I know. I would not think his report to be credible whatsoever.
It's true. So. Okay.
Well, to me, it just happens to be just a normal guy.
We'll take the benefit of the doubt away from him, but he did say. Now, what I would want to know is, did he say this after knowing about the story, or did he say this independently, just being investigated?
Not 100% sure.
I didn't really find, like, if he knew about the encounter and then he gave a statement on saying he's seen the helicopters, or he's seen the helicopters without knowing about these.
Right. I'm not 100% sure if he gave an exact number about how many helicopters, or he remarked on like, an unusual amount of helicopters, or he just saw maybe two or three, because if that one pilot, that one pilot said they were flying during that night, maybe it was more than one. He didn't say there was 23 or 20 or
it's tough. It'd be tough to count that many.
Every single helicopter in the state, yeah. Basically.
But both Betty and Vicky, they pursued this. They pursued this case, like their incident, their encounter. They believe that something happened and something had affected both of them. And Becky, was at the. At this point that she was suffering this medical conditions that had left her unable to work. They had left. She had actually had to move in back with her mom in Alabama, I believe. She couldn't.
It is important to note, though, that she left the hospital after a 2-week stay. So 4 days after the event, she went and got admitted to the hospital. She left after a 2-week stay with the only diagnosis of alopecia areata. That's right.
For the hair loss.
With a fucking bloated face, a sunburn, and a diagnosis of the alopecia.
That seems like a long time alopecia to be in a hospital, though, to be just for alopecia, maybe? Or?
Right. They said that they had run other tests, or it was reported that the hospital had run tests, but they came back inconclusive, or that they just didn't show anything.
Right. And it's probably like, if... I'm not pointing any fingers, but I'm just saying if someone went to the hospital and they're saying they're sick and they couldn't stand up, the hospital would never tell them to go home, right? So you could say like...
If you came into a hospital explaining these things, if they ran tests and they couldn't find everything and everything came back inconclusive, they would most definitely be like, this is an emergency room. We need to clear up this bed. You need to fucking kick rocks.
So now if you went in and said that, they wouldn't keep you, even though you're saying I can't walk and I'm sick. They would just say, well, all your tests say you're healthy, so get out of here.
get out.
If you can walk, you will be gone.
Well, that's also like, we're judging by hospitals that are running at capacity. Maybe the smaller county had more room and they were allowed to stay longer, but either way.
Well, hold on. We're also thinking in two different sorts because here we have public health care. So it's like, yeah, we got too many beds. You got to go. But there, they're like, we're in the money.
You want to stay for 2 weeks?
We're in the money. they're like, you want to stay another day?
Stay.
100%.
Hey, you look a little shaky on your legs. Why don't you come back into bed? It's fine. We're going to run a couple more tests.
The doctors are looking. They're like, God damn, she's got good insurance. Keep her here.
Yeah, we're going to I don't think they were because she was on Medicare. Like, so they didn't have like super awesome insurance.
Medicare in the state, that's the state's universal health care is like if you're on Medicare, get this basic coverage kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think it covered, it probably didn't even cover most of those tests. Like, I don't, like if they were really advanced tests or something like really niche or something like that, I don't think they would have covered
it. It might have covered.
So then they have this woman that's just like,
I'm pretty sure, like, from what I was reading, like at some point, like she had racked up like $10,000 in medical debt. Like,
which makes sense.
I wonder what they're going to do to pay for it.
Yeah, what's the recourse to that, right?
Payment plan? Like,
you would eventually be like, someone's got to pay for this. Like, right, I got hurt. And someone's got to pay. And it ain't going to be me.
Yep. And you're justified in thinking that. And so they thought that the person or the people to blame was the government because they believed that when they had seen those helicopters seemingly pursuing this craft, they recalled identifying these aircraft as having United States military markings on them.
Right.
They reported this in a deposition that they had gone. They had actually been summoned to after they had reported their incident, and they had contacted their Texas senators, both Lloyd Bentsen and John Tower at the time. And the senators had just suggested that they file a complaint with the Judge Advocate Claims Office at Bergstrom Air Force Base. So they were summoned to Austin, Texas to give their interview. So if you look it up,
did they get summoned to this deposition after going to that air show?
This was August 1981 when they got summoned to this. So it probably was sometime after that, I'm pretty sure.
So they've seen them up close now.
Right. So they've seen these aircraft.
In daylight.
Yeah. And they were specifically questioned on that during their deposition. You can look it up, like Cash Landrum deposition or interview. It comes up. They have the transcript of the actual interview. It's about 2 pages. And they were interviewed by acting staff judge advocate Captain Terry Davis and claims officer and Miss Pat Wolf, an assistant claims officer. And in this interview, they asked him about exactly, what most interesting was they asked him about the markings on the aircraft. They said, did you see markings on the aircraft? Were they written out? How do you know that they were United States military? And they said, well, we saw it on there. And they're like, well, did you see it written out? Did you see it written out in print? They're like, no, well, not exactly. Like, we saw like just markings. It's not 100% clear. If you look at the recorded deposition, I'm not sure
exactly what they
what
said.
What they saw. Because right. they don't really say that we saw the, you know, we saw the star with the stripes, Air Force. You know, they don't say that. They just saw they saw something printed on the side, but they assumed that this was, you know, United States military aircraft.
And isn't that when Kobe piped up and said, yeah, just like the one we saw in fucking Dayton.
Right. So at some point, like during there, so they are like, they had seen these aircraft, but it's just, they had seen these dual rotor aircraft. So it's, I don't know, if you go through that interview, it's a little bit kind of like, I found the interview kind of strange because it's like, why would you interview all three at the same time? That seems kind of weird.
You think you'd separate and get stories on their own and see if they
right. So match. I always feel like when I read that, I'm like, well, either they weren't really taking it seriously as a, you know, as an interview. It's just they did it wrong, or they fucked up and they should have just interviewed them individually.
Like, they probably should have. But so I think there's two different ways to think about it. One is they seen these dual rotor helicopters, and sure, they say 23 or 26, but maybe they were guessing, but they seen them, and then they see them again at the air show, and they're like, oh, then they match, like, oh, I seen that aircraft back then. Or if you're going to like skeptically look at it, they seen the aircraft and be like, yeah, that's the one, and they're just like making it up. That's the two different sides. So either they seen the aircraft fly overhead. And I mean, we're going to get to the theories at the end, but maybe this was some type of experimental aircraft that, you know, that no one want, you know, didn't want to know about. And it had some type of propulsion and it was shaped weird, blah, blah, blah. And that's why there's so many helicopters. So it's either they seen helicopters that night during this encounter, and then they seen them again at the air show and then they matched them, or they seen them at the air show only and, you know, they're making it all up. And that's what it's been the whole time.
So the remarkable things about this case is that it is actually well documented, thanks to the depositions of the two women and Colby, like, giving this out. But also in the fact this is one of the unique cases that they actually, you have actual lawsuits filed for damages.
Yep.
Against against a UFO. Cash and Landrum filed a suit against the United States government in 1982, and they were seeking $20 million in damages.
So, hey, you got to shoot your shot, man.
Yep.
I mean, I guess, because actually during the interview, if you go ahead and read that, they recommend that it's like, they pretty much at the end of the interview, they tell them like, there's fuck all we can do for you. We can't do anything because the United States government doesn't have a body to investigate these claims anymore. We can send your report up and we'll do that because it's paperwork. So we'll do that. But there's nothing really that we can do. And, you know, Cash and Landrum are obviously upset about this and the thing. And they said, well, you can, you know, you should maybe talk to a civil attorney. I guess they talked to a civil attorney and the attorney told them like, yeah, you should go for $20 million in damages.
$20 million.
I guess. Quite a bit. I don't know.
In 1980.
Yeah. So they claimed that the military was responsible for the injuries and the health issues that they were experiencing. Up to that point. So in 1986, the U.S. District Court dismissed the case due to lack of evidence.
Which so, there is of, because they didn't take pictures of the data. Like, they didn't take pictures or anything of all the stuff they were talking about.
It's the 80s though, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
What would they be packing for cameras?
You know, what I had said before, he cited that actual military investigation that was that had been done by Lieutenant Colonel George Sarin, and where the court had determined that the official records couldn't corroborate that the Army had deployed CH-47s on that night, or that any branch of the military had actually, or any branch of the military had possession.
It was secret. Yeah. Well, no, it was great. Even they had a major Dennis Hare testify that, like, he's like, I'm the commander of the troop and I personally have no knowledge of any mission, and I was not personally flying any helicopter that night. And that was it. And they're like, that's our proof that we weren't doing anything, because this guy said he wasn't there and he doesn't have knowledge of it.
That's what I mean. Like, if you did say it was like an experimental flight of something that had like a jet engine out the bottom, and that's what it actually did burn the road. And then they're like, all right, no one, whatever, whoever's involved in this tonight, we never speak. Like, you sign the NDA or whatever, and you just don't speak about it. Because it wasn't really much, except I'm going to get to my theory at the end, but like this car of people witnessed it. And I mean, one of the theories is they used this event to justify pre-existing health conditions or whatever. And that's why no one ever talked, because like, well, it's just one party versus this experimental program. There's no reason for us to like say it was a real thing. But I don't know.
Yeah. So, this case, you know, runs in. That's pretty much like the end of the case. Both Betty and Vicky passed away. They never saw pretty much a dime of any of this thing. Their lives were pretty much changed. They're very much changed about this.
One thing to add into that, though, is they lived full lives before they passed away.
Not both.
Yeah. Betty died in her 70s. That's a full life, man.
Well, she died 70 and Vicky was 84.
Yeah. So they both lived, pretty full lives of what they did.
I guess.
I think Betty reported, you know, still suffering some of from the effects of this craft, or what she attributed to the craft.
So, sounds like she had a few open heart surgeries after having an MI, and then she ended up getting a bilateral mastectomy and I think passed away after that.
Right.
I think she was diagnosed with breast cancer at some point. Yeah.
So she had the mastectomy. Mm-hmm. After
also, she had cancer because there was radiation. That was the onset from this craft.
It's acute radiation syndrome.
Maybe, but in Unsolved Mysteries, when they're talking about Colby, they're like, this guy is gonna have to make choices if he wants to have a family. Like, he's severely psychologically affected from this incident.
He's got PTSD because he saw the Second Coming. So I mean,
yeah.
This elderly lady screaming that it's the Second Coming of Christ, and then
That's so nuts, because his grandma, even in the deposition, they were like asking her, like, what were you doing? Like, what were you doing with Colby, like, while they were outside the craft? She's like, well, I was telling him to look at it. Look at the light, because if he, you know, look into the light and look for a big man, because that's Jesus, and you need to, like, face him. And that's in the deposition. Like, if that is the official
document. You're going to have to tell this man your sins and you're sorry.
Yeah. Colby now has a lifelong fucking fear of Jesus and Werther's Originals.
Right.
That's nothing to do with either of them.
But, like, That's what I mean. Like, if it was just this old lady yelling about Jesus, like the Second Coming of Jesus, but there was nothing for him to relate it to, like if it was nothing, that's what makes me think like it was some type of, it was a craft of some kind. They're in the wrong place, wrong time, and they seen this craft, and this old lady screaming, it's the Second Coming of Christ, and this other lady, Betty, gets out, and she claims that she gets zapped by this thing, and the handles are burning, like, and maybe it was because this experimental craft was blasting, you know, a flame at the ground, and that heated up the car a little bit. So this kid is fucked up. He's 7 years old. He's not really old enough to know what's really happening yet. If he was, like,
Either were the two elderly people in there. One of them thought it was fucking Jesus.
This poor kid.
I thought one of the unusual thing, not unusual, but I thought one of the remarkable things about their deposition was that they both they staunchly believed that this was not some type of UFO. They believed it was some type of military craft.
Some craft.
They weren't. They talked about almost with people who were investigating it as a UFO. They said they had been contacted by people who believed it was a UFO or wanted to put kind of a UFO spin on their story. And they talked with almost like disdain. They're like, these people are charlatans. These people are, we don't want to talk to them because they just want to put out a sensational story. It was something, it hurt us. And if it's hurt us and it might hurt other people's family, we just want to know what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'd imagine that like the ufologist, why am I saying that wrong?
Ufologist?
It's ufologist or UFOologist?
You can say it either way. No, it's not a real thing.
They must have been they must have been hot on the trail of this, though, because like, isn't this fucking crazy close to the Rendlesham incident?
In terms of time? Are you talking about
I can't remember.
When was Rendlesham? 84.
Well, the other one happened. Rendlesham happened in the UK, but I'm talking time-wise, right? Because, and then we also had like investigators from the U.S. investigate Rendlesham.
Well, because that was a military U.S. military base at the time,
right? It was a joint. It was a joint,
joint or joint base,
UK,
yeah.
Joint, UK,
right? And which US happened base. Like within months.
Well, yeah. Okay, Rendlesham quick search was December 26th to 28th, 1980.
So that's like right days before.
Days before, like right days. Before.
Exactly right. So that's fucking shit's heating up, man.
So something's well, happening, perhaps.
I will go out and like my theory of it. I don't think this incident is UFOs at all. I don't. I believe that this is, in fact, they saw something, but what I believe they saw was some sort of experimental craft.
Yeah.
Or the same thing that we discussed on the ATT Confidential Devil's Footprints. It was an experimental balloon that, you know, let loose.
Had some jet, some propulsion
listen,
system.
Listen, though, hold on. I want to jump in on that really quick because you said experimental balloon. What fucking shape was this thing?
A diamond.
Diamond.
And where was the fire coming from?
Bottom.
The bottom.
And when Dan explained it, it would like puff up and go psht, and then kind of die out and go psht. What the fuck does that look like in your head?
A hot air balloon.
A hot air balloon. Exactly.
Now, I would like to think that like, do I believe it was balloon? No. What I believe is that they were probably testing some sort of craft that had an experimental propulsion system. And that's why I
like
don't believe it's aliens.
Propulsion?
There's no, yeah, exactly. Maybe. Some sort of, maybe. Because like well, aliens wouldn't use a combustion system like that for traversing this,
no.
like a fuel
no
system
chance.
Like that. It'd be too far. Like it'd be, you would expend too much. Yeah.
It's too archaic too. Like out of every single UFO story we've talked about, we've never heard of an archaic fucking combustion system like this before in any of the fucking crafts we've talked about.
Yep. That's why this one's us. It's us 100%.
100%.
Now, having said that, there's two possibilities. One
is there.
There's like a nuclear, it's a, some sort of nuclear propulsion. And these people,
Wrong place, wrong time.
Feel the effects. Wrong place, wrong time. And the helicopter is exactly that. They're escorting this craft, or they're just tailing it because it's not working properly. We know there's so many like airports and air bases in Texas. They're fucking all over the place. So I don't think it's unfathomable to reason like rule out Texas as a place after Area 51 that was used to try experimental aircrafts.
My one issue now with this potential nuclear engine or propulsion system that they would be test piloting is if that nuclear energy is what gave them their illnesses, they all three of them would have been fucking dead.
So yeah,
to induce those types of symptoms related to ARS, you would be fucking dead. That's like 6 to 8 fucking GY, which is enough to kill someone.
And I will say to Andrew's point that nuclear propulsion and to address Braden's point about a nuclear propulsion system, those things do exist. A nuclear propulsion system and the concept for nuclear propulsion systems do exist. And, you know,
Project Pluto.
Well, yeah, Project Pluto is one. And, but those things, all they pretty much do is use the heat from a nuclear reaction to ignite like liquid hydrogen.
Right.
That's pretty much what they do. So it's not like they're spewing radiation out the back of the thing. Cause it's like, that would be a really shitty way to, for an aircraft that was either, if you're thinking about landing it somewhere, it seems like a really shitty way logistically to be like, okay, well, we need an aircraft that takes off, even if it's some sort of like VTOL craft. You're like, I want a nuclear powered VTOL craft that also irradiates everything within like a 100-foot radius. Like,
well, that's the thing. That's nuclear power.
What if it was damaged and the helicopters were escorting it back to the fucking airbase?
Exactly.
Well, that would make sense. Like, it didn't seem flying properly.
Right. But even then, it's like if it were damaged, I don't think it would work. Like, I don't think it would spew enough radiation. But like you said, it's like if it were acute radiation like thing, wouldn't their teeth be fucking out when you see like their kidneys shutting down? You'd see like all kinds of like really fucked up shit going on.
So, for example, between 6 and 8 GY, which is what their symptoms are indicative of the exposure levels, you have a 95% to 100% mortality rate.
Yeah, you see shit. I mean, most people have watched the TV show Chernobyl, or they've watched a documentary about Chernobyl. Those motherfuckers got irradiated and they're dead. like in right? some
so
units.
You, so what we know is you either would die instantly from this radiation or you would turn into the Hulk. Neither happened.
Now, right. That's what I'm saying is like, that's there was only two options. It was that they stumbled upon this nuclear powered craft, or this craft had some sort of propulsion system that heated up, and all the other symptoms are a pure coincidence. And I'll leave it to Dan to tell his theory because mine ties into okay. his.
Well, that's exactly where I'm going with. So I'll give mine first. So I think that, yes, there was a craft. I think it probably was an experimental drone or balloon or something. And maybe it wasn't, not necessarily it had malfunctioned completely, but they're like, oh shit, this thing's like well off course. Like, so maybe a couple of these helicopters were pulling it back. Do I think there was 23 helicopters? It seems redundant to have that many. If you're following a small object to have 23. So maybe there was a handful and they got confused with the lights or whatever. But I think that there was a craft. They probably did see something. The medical bills piled up, and then they maybe recanted the statements to try and match it better, to try and be like, okay, well, yeah, all this is because the radiation of this craft. But as far as radiation, we were just talking about it. Like, the radiation causes the heat, like in like nuclear power, like it causes the heat and it boils the water and the water turns a turbine and that's what causes the power. It's not like... So if it was nuclear, it wasn't radiating pure. It was, yeah, it was creating heat to generate thrust on something else, was some weird engine. So I think it was this, they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, but then they turned it into we're in the right place at the right time to push the story. Do I think it was aliens? No, because as we said, there's no alien craft that we've ever talked about that has a propulsion out the bottom, and it seems to just bob around in a weird way. So,
do you want, Brayden, you want me to get my theory because you want to fucking tie yours in?
Yeah, mine ties into dance.
There we go.
So my theory is that a lot of the symptoms, like a majority, if not all of the symptoms that all of them experience to varying degrees, are all symptoms that can be associated or products of food poisoning.
Alopecia?
Not acutely. No,
it's a food point. You can get like severe cases of salmonella and other types of food poisoning.
Exactly,
you can get,
and you can, but acutely within fucking hours of coming in contact with the fucking
what about alopecia?
With the parasite.
I think you could.
You're wrong. You can't. The only type of fucking hair loss you can fucking achieve from a said parasite like that is diffuse hair loss, which means you're not going to be pulling.
She didn't say it was immediate hair loss.
Yes, she did. It is in their statement that when they came home later that night, Betty started pulling clumps from her hair.
She didn't check on Betty until later, and then she realized she was losing her hair.
It was later that night.
But here's the thing, Andrew.
And within what I'm saying is with diffuse hair loss would come in effect within 3 to 4 months after due to an inflammatory disease.
These ladies are eating Gastor Pep and Chads, Andrew.
I understand that.
Right?
But that,
you know what that does to your guts?
Yeah, but it's diffuse. You would not be pulling it out in clumps. It would be shedding everywhere like your hair is falling out right now.
Yeah.
It's not in fucking acute. Certain spots. It would be fucking throughout the entire scalp.
But maybe it might also triggered an autoimmune response, and then she had alopecia areata, which is a thing that can happen in sudden onset.
She probably has alopecia areata to begin with, not from fucking salmonella.
But then it's just a combination of the two. Then I'm saying that she also had alopecia areata, and she also had, so it's just a strange confluence of events that she also had extreme food poisoning.
Betty and Landrum had the exact same symptoms. They both had that exact same rare occurrence.
No, they didn't both lose that hair.
Vivian said she lost her hair from this. She lost her hair and fucking fingernails from it.
Wait a second here. Okay.
Or Vicky. So no. Braden, bullshit. Wait. I call fucking bullshit on that.
I'm just calling bullshit. Braden, what were you going to say?
No, I'm with Dan. I think
I'm sure you
that
are.
It's just a happenstance of coincidence. I believe the women saw something.
Yeah.
I believe they saw some sort of experimental craft. I don't believe that craft irradiated them. I believe they were irradiated from the diner down the road by eating rotten pepper chets, where some gas station homo was changing the expiry date.
Fish and chips at a truck stop restaurant, and you got fucking food poisoning.
Dude, like, yeah,
they probably all were getting cod.
Dude, I would agree that if you had the shitty gas station food, that the diarrhea and the fever and all that stuff, but to just immediately start losing your hair seems wild to me.
No, it seems unfathomable.
Listen, I had a bad batch of popcorn and melted a hole in a cement wall. All right? Like, weird shit can happen.
Yeah, your hair was falling out far before that happened.
Right? Food can do weird shit to your body.
I'm not going to lie there. Food can do weird shit to your body. To your hair falling out, I don't know. But I'm just saying.
But here's the thing. The stress.
As to the craft, I didn't address the craft. So as to the craft,
the stress.
Maybe they did see something, but also, with the extreme case of salmonella, you can have hallucinations. Was that what it was? I don't know.
All three of them?
Boys, how long do you digest? How long does it take you to digest that fucking food?
Colby was seven years old, so he would have known what they told him. I don't know if he was exactly looking at what he saw or whether he was describing what they saw.
They finished their food within like fucking how long of them leaving and experiencing this encounter?
Max 1 hour.
No, but I'm not saying that they didn't see.
You haven't even digested your food yet.
I ate with Brayden at a restaurant in Thailand, and in half an hour, he was fucking dying.
Dying. Because he probably had food poisoning from the meal he ate before that.
No, I ate bad shrimp. It was bad shrimp at the restaurant.
Shrimp, come on quick.
I knew when
he
I ate it.
He had a poop in a trash can.
I knew when I ate it.
Yeah, that's Brayden. That's what happens often, apparently. We've multiple fucking encounters in that.
I don't discount that they saw something. I believe they saw an experimental craft. I don't believe that they got all those symptoms from said craft. I believe that it was most likely, maybe she had mild, what is it, appalachia or whatever it's called before?
Alopecia.
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 This is a stressful event for someone.
She had minor alpaca, okay?
She had minor alpaca.
Serious.
And, you know, they had some bad pep and cheds. They're already feeling bad. They see this event, which is like the amount of stress induced. She thought she was seeing Jesus. She was prepping a 7-year-old to meet his maker.
God.
You know what I mean? Like, she was stressed. So I imagine the stress and the post-traumatic stress of this thing could have triggered the hair loss faster. Like, I'm saying that it's a perfect blend of coincidence.
It's a perfect shitstorm.
Yes, they were sick from food, gas station food, because they couldn't get the bingo reg, right? Like, they saw an experimental craft. You know, she had the hair loss from the stress from it all. Like, I'm saying it's a perfect storm of coincidence on this one.
It's not straightforward, but I hear you. The combination of events led to this. I don't know. Did we all give theories? Should we wrap the?
Should I don't wrap know. It up? You guys all missed the easy fucking layup here.
Aliens.
What's that?
It's obvious. No, it's not aliens. It's a publicity stunt.
For what?
What you guys all forgot to mention is that Betty Cash is fucking Johnny Cash's fucking third cousin twice removed. Before she died, she attempted to release the single Burning Ball of Fire.
Oh, and then he stole it?
I drove into a burning ball of fire. I drove. The bright got brighter. It's bright, 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 this ball of fire. Never got released. She died too early. She
died too early?
Simple as that. It's all a fucking publicity stunt. I drove into a burning ball of fire as I drove. Again,
there's no
drove
way you can do it over
the
Skype.
None of that's true.
None of that's true.
What are you talking about? It's just about as true as fucking losing your hair to sudden onset fucking food poisoning that set in within an hour.
That happens.
No, it doesn't. As soon as you're going to be showing symptoms for food poisoning is maybe 2 hours. Right. Maybe.
Let's fire up the randomatron. I know we got a bunch of new fan stories.
All right.
Oh, I'm so angry. I can't do this anymore.
he finishes beers before the pod. He's just, that's what he's mad about more than anything, I think. All right, randomatron coming up. Oh, I'm dying. Coronavirus. Here he comes. It's working extra overtime today.
Oh. Ooh.
Just pumping.
Ooh. Oh, we got a nice fan submission. A Jason Bourne fan submission. Nice. I'd like to remain anonymous. I don't wish to lose my career over questions of my mental fitness. Oh, shit. Fucking damn. Jason Bourne. He's going to get kicked out of the...
Hold on a sec. Are you sure you haven't read this one already?
Yeah.
There's a lot of Jason Bournes out there.
I know, but this, even the beginning of it sounds very familiar. Is he a security guard?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I didn't read this. Yes,
you did. I've heard it. Why? How else would I know that?
It literally came last week, February 21st.
I'm fucking 99% sure you fucking talked about this story. It hasn't even been a week since we've done a case file.
No, I pre-read this one and I mentioned it to you guys.
I don't think so, but go ahead. Continue.
I'm not going to read it.
No, you're in.
Because of Andrew?
No, you have to read the
story. I've never read this one.
Read
I know
it.
I haven't. Because he knows better. I didn't do one last week.
He knows better.
Okay, so I work as a security guard for a local company.
All right.
And I usually work overnight patrol of about 80 properties. Sound familiar?
No.
Andrew thinks he's heard it word for word.
Andrew's drunk. Don't listen to him.
Yeah. One night when I arrived at a car dealership, I noted some hot headlights in a field behind the property. I pulled off and began walking back to stay quiet and interrupt any criminal activity. Saw no one. I continued back to the back fence, and I stood up on the support to peer over it, because I could still see the headlights in the field. I looked over, and everything went white. I opened my eyes, and I was lying on the ground. No clue what happened, but the light was gone, and 45 minutes had passed. Also, my gun had been removed from my holster. The magazine BP was lying next to it. I don't know what the magazine BP is.
Magazine.
I'm pretty sure I remember this story.
I fucking knew it.
No, I
remember you telling this one.
No. You told this story. Yes, you did.
He told it to us, but he didn't.
I told it
to
you guys. I didn't read it.
There's no way you told us this story.
Okay. Right.
When has that ever happened?
After everyone can make sure to vote and the next vote, Andrew and Dan at the bottom.
Yeah. Put Zell.
I've never read this.
Just put me at third. I'm always constantly at third. I'm fine with that.
I'll take a number two. I'll be fun. Funny to get up there.
It's shitty because this is such a good story. Now we're not doing it justice. The magazine BP was lying next to it, and the 13 bullets were standing next to the magazine on the ground, hollow points up. Come to find out, the next time I went for target practice, these were all duds. I really have no clue exactly what happened, but I've had dreams of being abducted a couple times since. But that's probably just my mind trying its best to piece together what happened that night. Or so I hope so. Best wishes, Anonymous, Jason Bourne.
I remember the story, but I don't know where you told it to us.
No,
because I'll tell you this. I know I was going to read this one last week, but I didn't. I told you guys about it. And the story I read instead is I told the story about the guy who was like, at the end of his story, he goes, oh, except for Braden or something. He made fun of me at the end of his story.
I remember that.
I told you guys about this one.
Yes, definitely.
For this week.
Okay. I've heard this story.
I remember you saying I submitted it to the Randomatron, but I don't know when that was. Either way.
It just got submitted to alientheorists@gmail.com on February 21st, 2021. So it's impossible that my story is true.
I think, no.
You decide the truth.
You might have told it on After Hours, to be honest. Either way, that's a good fucking story.
Maybe I did.
Dud hollow points afterwards. Fucking crazy.
Wild. I don't know. Get some hypnotic regression. If you're listening to this, Jason Bourne, try some hypnotic regression if you want to try to learn more about what happened. Doesn't hurt to try. Or it does. Who knows?
But it might not. So either way, you should try.
Might awaken some shit. You're going to be touring conventions like Travis Walton after this. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. Do whatever you want.
All right. Theory of the week. Andrew, you got a theory of the week?
We've got a Theoret of the Week. Eric Smith fucking amazing post on Facebook. He reposted a New York Times article of a Texas plumber sues car dealer after his truck ends up on a on the Syria front lines. It's got a picture of Mark One plumbing truck with a fucking machine gun mounted to the back of it. And his Eric Smith's caption is this Zell's
Dude,
truck?
That's my fucking truck. My truck is over there in Syria somewhere. I'm telling you. Oh, wait.
I mean, this one's not a taco like you're
over in the Middle East with a 50 cal mag mounted on the back.
I got an 08 taco.
I got some of my fucking cousins in there fucking saying, Alhamdulillah.
My 08 taco, got stolen with 140,000 clicks on it, kilometers.
What year was it?
08. So it's 3 years ago.
That's a $20,000 truck.
Yeah, it was a 20. Yeah, I got like 24,000 for insurance. It was awesome. So I got, and I ended up getting the exact same truck, different color. But it got stolen. If I only tell the story usually in depth at fan meetups when I'm really drunk, but my truck
in depth, he's screaming it at the whole bar.
I stole my truck.
But my truck got stolen. Yeah. When I talked to the cop, I was like, my truck got stolen, blah, blah, blah. He's like, what kind of truck? I was like, oh, wait, Tacoma. He's like, oh, yeah, it's probably in fucking Afghanistan. I was like, what the fuck do you mean it's probably in Afghanistan? He's like, yeah, like they steal trucks and they put them in shipping containers and they ship them over there and then like the Taliban buys them and shit. I was like,
yep, mount 50 cals on the back, rocket launchers.
So I didn't believe him at first, and then I heard some of these stories. This is not the first one I've heard of, like, yeah, my business truck is, I seen it on the news in Afghanistan or fucking Syria or something, and it's got a fucking 50 cal mountain in the back. It's a fucking, so my truck's over there. I love that truck. I loved it. Made me buy some other shitty, not as good, cool one. I'll never forget it. So if I ever see it on the news, I'm coming for it. I'm coming. I'll get it back.
That was a nice truck. I really
so basically,
that.
You can directly, like Zell's 7 degrees of 9/11 is fairly close.
My truck is seen on TV and anything do over there.
Yeah.
No, come on. That's funny though. Oh, that's good shit. Stop stealing trucks, guys. Come on. Buy your own fucking
truck. Just stop stealing in general. It sucks.
Stop stealing. Buy your own fucking trucks for whatever cause you want. Fuck my truck. My truck is an innocent little work truck. Transported carpentry equipment and musical instruments. And that's it.
Stop trying to liberate your countries from Western oppression.
Not with my truck, at least. Get your own fucking truck. Anyways, this week's Patreon supporters... If you're not already, go check it out. Early access, Discord, everything. We say it every week. We finally did it. We had a 600-person goal, and we finally made it with these people this week.
Woo! 600.
Full-year pledge by Mick. Full-year pledge by Tyler Cross. Ed Kettlers. James. Danilchuk. Teddy Paris. Cody Dixon, Cody from Manitoba. Thanks, brother. We appreciate it. Jay Wiseman, Colleen McElvin, Cousin Balthazar. Isn't Balthazar some type of like demon of hell or something? Balthazar?
I have to look it up exactly.
You would know.
I thought it was Babar's dad.
He's an old friend.
Babar's dad.
A full year pledge by Stewie W.
Stewie D.
Hallam Knight went up. I am the one who knocks. Kira, Anastasia, James Calicott, and AMAZO or AMAZO, depending on which side of the border you reside on. Thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.